At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
It was like a loophole so big that like 1 million cars drove through it. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior editor at Inside EVs. On this week's show, we discuss, is the U.S. in its back-to-gas era? Plus, the BMW X5 will soon have five different powertrain options to choose from. Five. How crazy
five.
Is that?
Five. What? What?
Plus, Volvo is going through some stuff, which I feel like has been a topic on a few different episodes. But today it's all about software. But first, Patrick, how is it going? I'm asking you this, even though I actually saw you not too long ago in person a couple days ago. But how has your Tuesday and Wednesday been?
It's been good. Probably sad for you because you haven't seen me in 2 days, even though you made clear the last time we hung out in New York that you're abundantly sick of me and can't stand my face anymore. Tough but fair. This now might be a good time to mention that in the coming weeks, we've got something really special and exciting for listeners to the Plugged In Podcast, is that at Climate Week NYC this week, we recorded three special bonus episodes of this show in partnership with BMW, and had some great interviews with their top executives about what's next for the company and its sustainability efforts and things like hydrogen cars and some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. And like, I know that I was saying like sustainability doesn't sound that exciting, but we actually got up to some really cool stuff with the folks at BMW, and we're mega excited for you to listen to it in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, those will be three special bonus episodes that'll come out three consecutive Wednesdays starting October 8th. So you'll get the BMW episode with a BMW executive talking about sustainability on Wednesdays, and then we'll still be doing our regular episodes on Fridays. So just a little additional Inside EVs podcast for you in the middle of the week.
Yeah, it was a great event. Huge crowds, like the BMW brought all these journalists out, and they like were there to listen to us, and we had to talk in front of an audience for the first time, which was terrifying but awesome. So I think we knocked it out of the park. I got some halal cart after. God, I miss living in New York City.
I was going to say, how was that? I'm like, it's like I have like a Pavlovian response to the halal carts. I feel like, I don't know if it's growing up, and I don't know if everybody has that. Anybody who lives in New York, especially me, like going to high school here, it was just like the best thing.
It was
to
so
have
good
at essentially any time of day. $5, 2,000 calories,
2,000
enormous amounts of MSG. It's just the best.
Yeah, those guys. Like, I mean this legitimately. I say they're the heroes. They're the real heroes. Is New York's halal cart vendors. God bless them. All right, let's talk about what people actually tune into this ostensibly to listen to is cars. And I'm going to lead this episode off with some big personal news, Tim. I am hemi swapping my Kia EV6. I'm ripping out the battery and the those woke electric motors, and I'm putting in a gas guzzling hemi V8. Man, it's going to take some doing, and it's complicated for me financially because the car is a lease. We got to fit the zeitgeist, baby. And in America right now, we're going back to gas.
Yeah, and I don't have an EV, so I'm just going to keep driving my gas car, but I'm going to idle especially long and hard just because of, the cultural moment.
Yeah. Just sit there revving in the parking lot, just revving it as hard as you can.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be the first Subaru owner to do that. I used to be a WRX bro, and I in my younger days. So it's, game recognized game. Tim and I bring up these terrible jokes because as we record this, we are 1 week out from the federal EV tax credit in America going away. And that is a big policy shift for the car companies that we cover, as is the end of any meaningful fuel economy regulations that have been pushing towards a more majority electric market in the United States by the 2030s. Yeah. And frequent listeners of the show and readers of Inside EVs know all this. It's stuff we've been covering for months. But I have to say, I'm kind of shocked lately at the speed of the retreat from these big EV plans that I'm seeing right now, like instant light speed almost.
Yeah. I mean, and like you say, readers should know about this. We should know. We do know about this. But then when you actually look at all the announcements that have happened recently, it's kind of wild just how fast and hard these companies are retreating. Like, we see the headlines for the last, you know, year or so. It's been like, you know, so-and-so car company delays this. Somebody cancels that. But when you look at it in totality, it really is a big trend away from electrification, rather unfortunately. So take us through some of the biggest news here, Patrick.
Yeah. And I'll just say real quickly, like, my dream is to reach that one listener that finds us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and just like, oh, tune in. And they're like, oh shit, the tax credits are going away like this weekend. I better go buy that Equinox I've been thinking about. Like, I want to find that one person that's interested in this field and didn't know that. And I will pray for them. But no, it is important to start with the fact that some of these shifts have been happening for a while. General Motors, for example, announced about a year ago that it's going to dial back electric production at some of its plants. It won't make the Orion assembly plant in suburban Detroit all electric like they plan to. Mercedes is killing off its slow-selling EQ electric cars here in America. And last year, Ford said it's not going to make an electric three-row SUV after some big announcements around that. So they're all dealing with like slower EV uptake than they expected, kind of across the board, and much less in the way of EV profits than they had hoped for. But like, this trend has really picked up steam lately. And a couple more examples, like last week, you know, Nissan's bringing us the Leaf, 300 miles of range for $30,000. Awesome. But it's also killing off the Aria. Sad. Because of tariffs, because the Aria is made in Japan. They're like, you know, between that and the tax credits, no more RA for you guys. Sad. So, you know, it's a lot of examples. You've some more, I think, too.
Yeah,
right?
And like we talked about last week, the all-electric Ram truck has been axed in favor of a version that will also have a gas engine, the EREV.
Yeah. And as we record this today, Acura confirmed that it's going to kill off the ZDX, which is that crossover it makes that, like the Honda Prologue, is built on a General Motors electric platform. And finally, Porsche this week also said that it's going to keep the Boxster and Cayman as gas powered for another generation, as well as the electric one coming out. So there will be a gas Boxster and Cayman after all. Also, selfishly, like on a personal note, like I'm not super sad that the gas Boxster and Cayman are sticking around. Sorry, not sorry, folks. But also that Porsche's flagship three-row SUV they've been planning for a while is not going to be electric only. It's probably going to be like a hybrid and gas. So it's all
and of
these
course, the one that we're most distraught about, obviously, is Ferrari canceling its second EV that nobody knew about. That was a report from a couple months ago, which we were both obviously going to buy.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me that existed, because in the space of us talking about that on the podcast the last time and today, I completely forgot that they were going to make a second one also. So good work. Basically, all these car companies that had these big all-electric plans are, in the short term at least, kind of backing off on all of that. And we expect we will see similar announcements from others pretty soon.
Yeah, I think so. And in the meantime, they're announcing new gas cars, new generations of gas engines. GM announced that it's going to invest a ton in this plant to build more V8 engines. These companies are much more bullish on hybrids than before because they're seeing a lot of growth there. And it all makes us wonder, like, how much of this electric shift was just driven by regulations and tax credits?
Was it ever real, Tim? Any of it? Was it everything we thought we had together? Was it ever real?
We'll always have that time we got stuck in traffic together in that Sierra EV, Patrick. If all this stuff, you know, goes to shit, we'll still have that.
It was worth it for that. Yeah, for sure. But no, there's an interesting reckoning happening in America specifically, because a lot of what we talked about, it's happening in Europe too. But let's just say, for the sake of this discussion, this is primarily the American market. This reckoning is happening now after some big promises for years of like an all-electric future. I think it's a mix of market realities in some cases, unfortunate political circumstances, certainly, and like the cold, hard fact that a lot of this was just really half-assed. Automotive News this week had an excellent story outlining just what exactly happened to the modern EV tax credits. And they actually have a really good rundown, good list that I'd recommend our listeners check out. Among their reasons, you know, that the credit along with EV requirements off of the distance in some states fed the idea that the government was forcing customers to buy EVs. You know, the EV mandate, Tim, your favorite terminology.
Yeah, EV mandate, not really a thing. But no, this was a good story, and it was kind of looking at, you know, what got us to this moment where the EV tax credits are being taken away and like what happens next. And they really did a good job laying out essentially why a lot of these automakers overcooked their kind of plans for EVs, why this didn't take off like it could have, or like a lot of companies thought it would, even with these tax credits.
Yeah. And like starting with the mandate stuff, like this is a really fun quote here from one analyst they spoke to, is Raul Arredondo, who's the principal consultant at e-mobility strategy and marketing and former executive at Fiat Chrysler, RIP. And he had a great quote. He goes, "The U.S. consumer is really different. The main thing is that you shall not tell me what to do. If I want to shoot myself in the face, it's my right to shoot myself in the face. If I want to spend twice as much money over the life cycle of a vehicle, it's my right."
Yeah, as reporters, we like live for somebody on the phone saying something as awesome as that. That's a great quote.
He's right.
I think it's partially true. Like they're talking about how, you know, I mean, the argument is the tax credit may have even had a little bit of a detrimental effect just because it gives this impression that like the government is forcing this stuff on you, the people.
Yeah. And we are a big, diverse, disparate group of people, Americans. But like I think the one thing that we all really truly believe deep down, like regardless of race, creed, gender, religion, anything, is you can't tell me what to do. Like that's the most American attitude there is. And so like the belief that like gas cars would be phased out one day, you know, as perhaps unrealistic as that is, I think that really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, just to start with. Also there's the fact that the, EV tax credit itself was too complicated, because it was. And remember, very few EVs even fully qualified for the tax credit when they were purchased. It's because basically the cars and their batteries and a lot of the battery components had to be made in the United States or North America, which is like almost nobody because like China owns that supply chain so hard. And like this rule existed to try and cut off, you know, the Chinese stranglehold over the like the EV supply chain. But like doing that is going to take years. So that's why like five or six cars qualified for, you know, the tax credit at the point of purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is also why so many of the EVs that have been sold in the last few years have been leased, because any car that was leased would qualify for the EV tax credit, essentially, versus when you buy one, you have to abide by all these different rules.
Yeah, it was kind of a loophole. I mean, we've called it a loophole, and everyone just like, it was like a loophole so big that like 1 million cars drove through it. Then there was the stigma of ordinary taxpayers basically paying for wealthier buyers to get these like fancy upmarket electric cars that until like 2 years ago were significantly more expensive than a gas car. That made it a fine political target. Like I heard that from a lot of people, like, why are my tax dollars going to like rich people buying, you know, Teslas or Audis or whatever? And it's a bit of an oversimplification, but like, I can see why that pisses people off. Like, you know, and that's what Automotive News says there, you know?
Yeah. So that this is kind of Automotive News take on what got us to this back to gas moment. What do you think, you know, do you think it's more than that? What do you think is kind of driving this? Like, yeah, you know, if we're Honda, we're Acura, we're GM, we're Ford, like we're starting to move in a slight, like we still have EVs as like the North Star someday, but like for right now, we're kind of like pivoting in a different direction.
Yeah, I think it went deeper than that. I think it was a big fact the car dealers never wanted to bother with this stuff. They made that very clear. They didn't want to install chargers at the dealerships. They didn't want to learn how these things work. They didn't want to teach customers how they worked. The fact that all this quote unquote green marketing turned off half the country, and we get to our political divide there. And I think that's far less politically contentious in Europe, and certainly not a factor in China. And the fact that also like on their best day, the auto industry gets out lobbied like 1,000 to 1 by the oil industry and its various PR campaigns and political donations and, you know, more shadowy measures to kind of undermine electric vehicle adoption because that's bad for their business long term. And like, honestly, like I sound insane and conspiratorial when I say that. And I'm really not a conspiratorial person, but the longer I've covered this space, like the more I like Charlie Day style see those like strings fitting together. And let's, I do think that was a real thing. I think that like the oil industry really was freaked out by the idea that America's cars wouldn't run on gas someday. And I think they fought back hard and, you know, the car industry really wasn't up for that kind of a fight, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's trillions, perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars to be made on not transitioning to EVs, you know, by these fuel, oil and gas companies. Like, of course you can imagine that they're pushing pretty hard against this. There's a lot of factors that have been working against EV adoption, even when the tax credit was in place.
Yeah, then you have the fact that, you know, like President Trump was really against the tax credits, and even the elected officials who had like new EV battery factories in their districts, like we kind of thought they would fight to save them a little more, and they ended up not doing that. But I think ultimately it goes back to something that RJ Scaringe, the CEO of Rivian, told us a couple of weeks ago on this podcast. And maybe the cars just weren't that good to start with.
Yeah, what RJ said, and this got a lot of attention, at least the article that we wrote about it. He said to us, if you want to buy an electric vehicle for under $50,000 today, I would say in the United States, there are well under 5 great choices. Until you start to have a number of choices, we're not going to see the market really expanding. And I think that's a great point. Like a lot of this, you can throw tax credits at people. But at the end of the day, if a person doesn't see the car that they want and that they like feel swaggy in on that lot, like they're not going to buy it.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, he's right. Okay. Like I know that because like inflation is insane. The average new car in America goes for around $50,000 today, which is ridiculous, but like, okay, what are your great choices under $50,000? All right. Model 3 and Model Y, let's credit where it's due. I think those are still really, really great. Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Hyundais and Kias, like the Chevy Equinox EV probably. And I think that maybe this new Leaf, I'll know when we drive it, but like that's it, right? There's not under $50,000. Like, am I missing anything here, you know?
I think there are some okay ones, but not a lot of other, not really other great ones.
Yeah, yeah. Like cars where you're like, this, you really want to drive this because it's like great. Like there aren't many options out there, you know?
Yeah. And we are going to see this field get better over time. We've already seen it get, I mean, just compare like 2020 when I started covering this stuff to today.
Yeah.
Like a quantum leap in EVs. But there's still issues, right? Like these EVs are not profitable across the board. That's going to take some time. There's going to take some time to scale up battery production and bring those costs down. And also maybe we're going to see more, you know, reinventing how cars get built like Ford is doing with its upcoming, you know, universal EV platform. That's going to be, they say, a lot cheaper to build and profitable from the start.
Yeah. You know, the cynical side of me thinks that like what we're seeing now is a lot of companies that never really wanted to do this in the first place, never really took it seriously, and have been aching for like a pass to not deal with it anymore. Like those are the ones backing off. Like sorry to call it like it is, but it's like, okay, it's Honda, it's like Stellantis, it's a few of the ones that were not really like hitting home runs with this stuff at the outset that are backing off right now. You know, and also like they don't have the carrot or the stick to figure this stuff out. So why bother, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a thing that like we haven't discussed that yet, but that is the biggest part of this, right? Is like, for better or worse, this industry is driven in a lot of ways in a lot of parts of the world by regulation and by policy. And now, when you don't have the EPA rules, the California rules, fuel economy pushing you to go in that direction, why are you going to sell unprofitable cars, right?
Yeah.
And this is the big struggle. It's like, now we're looking at a future where it's going to be driven, this market is going to be driven a lot more by actual real consumer demand, by actual real, you know, desire by these companies to compete and to try to get ahead of China or ahead of their competitors here. But yeah, like when you look at, say, we brought up the Acura ZDX, right? This is the one that was canceled this week. It might come back for another generation, but this one is dead. Why did they cancel that? Earlier this year, we saw reports based on some industry data that they were giving buyers $21,000 per car to move these things off the lot. And so like they were incentivizing them into this kind of irrational degree, as RJ said in our interview, generally, they were incentivizing them because they needed to meet all these different regulations. So like, yeah, you're willing to sell some of these things at a loss. But now, why? Like I can understand, even though I think this is a better technology, you can level with the fact that like these automakers, well, they don't have to sell things there for no profit.
Yeah.
Why would they, right?
Yeah, in a Honda's case or Acura's case, like it wasn't even your car. It was a GM Ultium EV that like they shoved into a Honda suit, you know, and I see a good amount of ZDXs at my like local fast charging station at the grocery store in upstate New York where I live. And when I make chit chat with those people, I was like, why did you get that? It's like, they always say it was a great deal and it had Super Cruise, which is interesting because it's two areas where Honda's kind of behind, but it's like, okay, we didn't invest in this stuff. They only made those cars to get a foothold into the electric market. If it takes off now, we don't have to anymore, which is kind of like, as you said, if you believe as we do, like this is better technology, it is profoundly disappointing, you know?
Yeah. And I think what's important to note is like nobody really believes, none of the like serious industry watcher type people that we talk to believe that this is the end of EVs in America. Like there is demand for electric cars.
Yeah.
A lot of these companies, even the ones that are canceling some, are investing really hard in others. Like Ford, for example, they canceled the 3-row EV, but like they're developing this whole new process, this whole new manufacturing process for a cheap $30,000 electric truck. Acura, they're launching their own, the RSX next year, even though the ZDX is dying. So, you know, this stuff is going to grow over time. It's just that kind of the road there is a lot murkier than it was a year ago when you had all these policies pushing things forward and when you had what looked like a lot more kind of natural demand for these EVs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the last big thing we got to mention here is tariffs too. It's like none of these companies counted on just paying billions of dollars in fees every quarter, you know, like tens of billions of dollars. Like now's not a great time to be like investing in like future powertrain stuff that people may or may not have like giant demand for. It might not be profitable for a while. So perfect storm. But also like, I think this moment to kind of tack on to what you said a minute ago, it's not a test of electric vehicles in my mind. It's a test of whether established car companies can deliver this future, because it will come sooner or later. And if, you know, the GMs or Fords, Mercedes-Benzes or Hondas, just to throw some examples, like can't do it, like somebody else is going to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that is what the pattern history shows us, and that's what's going to happen here.
Yeah. And it's like who can like seize this moment, you know? Like are we gonna if we have a bunch of these, some of these car companies backing off, like who's gonna go really hard and steal a bunch of market share that maybe they weren't going to have otherwise.
Yeah. But the road getting there is going to be real weird in the process. Might even involve hydrogen. Right, Tim?
Yeah. Yeah, hydrogen. the topic that always comes out of nowhere and nobody expects.
It's back, baby.
It's back.
It's the most abundant really element left in the universe. And it never went anywhere.
Never really left, but it's also back.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Yeah, hydrogen-powered cars have basically been a footnote in the EV transition up until this point. And I was, when I was thinking about this, I think there, you basically have three camps of people here. You have the group that makes up about 95% of America, which is most people have absolutely no idea that you can, that a hydrogen powered car even exists.
Yeah.
My dad is one of these people. I've told him about this and he was like, wow, really? You can, I had no idea that you could buy a hydrogen powered car. I do not blame him. There are only two of them, as far as I could see, for sale, and only in California. You
yeah.
have the Toyota Mirai and the Honda CR-V EFC EV, which is their plug-in hybrid, plug-in and also fuel cell EV. There might be another one that I'm missing.
Do they still sell the Hyundai Nexo in America?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I saw a bunch of those in South Korea because, like, South Korea is yeah. one of those weird countries. Like, people actually buy hydrogen cars. But yeah, they did for like a minute. So yeah, I think that's
there
that's,
have been
that's
others.
Really it. Yeah,
that's really it. And then there are the really passionate people, which is there are some of the like EV people who hate hydrogen and can't understand why it would ever be a thing.
Yeah.
Because EVs are obviously better. And then there are the hydrogen nerds, which I've met a surprising amount of in my personal life, who are like, when they hear that I work on EVs, they're like, really? They're like, I think hydrogen is really the future. People get very passionate about hydrogen if you find the right person.
Do these guys show up like jump you on weekends in like leather jackets with like H2 on them or something like that? Because like you're an EV guy and you're in some like turf war with them. Is that like a thing that happens to you very often?
More often than you think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a pack of Mirais.
Yeah.
Just following me everywhere I go.
The crime in California is out of control, folks. I tell you. No, it's an interesting vibe in this country. I just like, before we get into the news, we talk about like the way I look at this is like, I think battery EVs are far, far, far ahead right now, but like, I don't think that this is something that should be ruled out long-term, and there are enough developments in this space that it's like interesting to keep an eye on. And we're going to talk about one today that's still betting on hydrogen as a pathway forward. That's BMW, who's been at this for a while.
Yeah, and so they've been at this for a while. They have not launched a real production hydrogen car that like you can actually buy. And this week, they announced that their first ever hydrogen-powered production car is coming in 2028, and it'll be the iX5 Hydrogen. And as we said at the outset, this SUV will come in 5 different powertrain options, which is crazy. We don't think that has happened before ever. I don't think there's any other car
ever
that is available in 5 different fuel options, basically.
Yeah, like I just as a car guy, this is like nuts what they've done. It's like the next X5 becoming gas, diesel, plug-in hybrid, electric, and hydrogen forms. This is BMW being like, we made everything. What more do you people want? You know, we gave you everything you wanted. It's up to you now.
Yeah.
You know,
consumer choice.
Hell yeah, it is. God.
Yeah, I don't see a no nuclear power. That's a miss, but you know,
it's for the best. That's 2035. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we don't really know a lot about this hydrogen iX5. They just said basically that it's coming. We do know that like other hydrogen fuel cell cars, this is basically an EV, right? This is an EV with motors. Just instead of a battery, you have a hydrogen fuel cell that stores the energy. BMW, as we learned in one of our BMW sessions, one of our BMW interviews recently, we talked to the vice president of BMW's hydrogen efforts, and he reminded us that BMW actually made a V12 combustion engine that ran on liquid hydrogen, and it made a very limited 7 series based on that. But this is not that. This is a hydrogen fuel cell EV where the system was jointly developed with Toyota, which is kind of one of the original proponents of hydrogen cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, BMW, we know that BMW basically worked on making this system more compact than before, and it took some of the learnings from this prototype it made before, but that's really it. We don't know a lot about the iX5 hydrogen.
Yeah. Kind of a shame the 6-liter hydrogen V12 didn't work out, just because that sounds kind of insane. And I know what it was like to drive, but I'm like, I'm curious enough, I'd love to find out. Yeah, our chat with BMW's VP of hydrogen sales, you know, whether you are really bullish on this technology or you think it's as smart people I know have said, it's the fuel of tomorrow and it always will be. It does sound like they worked hard this time to make a car that you actually want, to make a hydrogen car that you actually want. It's not like when you end up in some dirt cheap Mirai lease deal or something like that. Like, it does sound like they've have tried to craft like a truly desirable vehicle, which, like, if they can make it work, kudos to them. It's like, that's how you win here. It's like, we were just talking about why these afterthoughts don't work anymore, you know?
Yeah. No, it was really clear that BMW is not treating this. My first thought was like, okay, is this a real car? Is this a real consumer car that you expect people to really buy? Or is this like a tech flagship that demonstrates your hydrogen technology, but like, that's kind of it? And it seems like it's really the former. Like, they actually think this is a pathway that people might choose. They have these European emissions regulations bearing down on them, where they have to sell more and more EVs. They eventually, you know, won't be able to sell gas-powered cars. And so they think, yeah, like, maybe some amount of people, instead of buying the battery electric car, they'll buy the hydrogen car. And, you know, because there actually are benefits to it, right? It's this EV with the same emissions, essentially, as an EV when done right. But you can fuel it like a gas car, essentially. You could fuel it in like 5 minutes at a gas station, or at a hydrogen station. The problem is that infrastructure has always like really sucked. Like,
yeah,
in theory is the operative word here. In theory, these things are really cool.
Yeah, like if you think like DC fast charging or not enough level 2 charging near you is a pain in the ass, like, talk to a Mirai owner, because like their lives are just nightmares, I think, all the time. No, it's we had a big story last year. You know, there were class action lawsuits filed against Toyota Mirai owners who were like, they got sold on this idea you'd get this powerful zero emission car that you could fill up in a gas station like experience. But the reality was broken pumps and frozen nozzles and, you know, $36 a gallon for fuel, you know, just insane running costs when, you know, these hydrogen fuel prices went up, not enough infrastructure near them. You know, we interviewed people who were like, yeah, I'm stuck with this lease and I cannot afford to fuel this vehicle. They really got kind of screwed on this whole thing. So I think it all sounds great in theory, like you said, like the zero emission car that you have a gas station experience for, but like the infrastructure has such a long way to go to be viable, you know?
Yeah. There are like, I mean, in the US, this only exists in California, and even there, there aren't enough of them. When I moved to California, I was actually looking into buying a certified pre-owned Toyota Mirai, because it kind of looks like an amazing deal. And maybe for a few people out there it is, but for these CPO cars, they would give you the same thing that you get when you buy a new one, which is $15,000 worth of free fuel. They give you a card, and because they like, you know, because they know this is such a hard sell, they're like, here's 15 grand worth of free hydrogen.
It's free hydrogen, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I talked to a guy at I went to my local hydrogen station, which I think ended up closing. But I talked to this guy who was fueling there, and he was like, don't do it, dude. He was like, I did the same thing. Look at this bill. It was like $200 to fill his tank. The hydrogen fueling infrastructure is a big problem. You can't go everywhere you want to go. They suck. They're often broken. They're not everywhere. But what BMW says that they're doing here is like, one, they do have some efforts in place to help build this infrastructure out, to help give a signal to the to the, you know, station operators that like they should build more of this stuff. The other thing is, like we were saying, they're like, what the world has lacked is a cool, you know, hydrogen car that people actually want to buy. And they're like, if we can do that, then maybe this industry can actually go somewhere. And it kind of got us thinking, we were talking about this the other day, is like, what if instead of the Mirai or the Nexo or some of these other cars, what if the hydrogen car industry had its like Tesla Model S moment, you know, 10 years ago when these things started popping up as lease deals, maybe it was more. Like, what if you had like a really sick, like really impressive vehicle, the same way that the Tesla Model S launched EVs because it was like better, faster, cooler than all the gas cars.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, alternatively, like, imagine if instead of the Tesla Model S, we got the VinFast VF8. Like, yeah. where would we be now? Like, I'd be living in a trailer in West Texas, knocking over liquor stores for a living, and you'd probably be in Congress, I think, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Sounds horrible, but for both of us, honestly. Yeah, no.
I thought that's what you're already, your night job.
Well, just on holidays and weekends mostly. So this is an interesting thing we're gonna keep an eye on. I'm amazed at BMW's engineering effort to make a car as important as the X5 with five really different fuel types. Like, that's
pretty cool.
Pretty remarkable. And we'll see how good this H2 X5 is going to be. Like, if it could be outstanding, but if the infrastructure isn't there, then I don't know.
Yeah. You know? So where do you think? I mean, let's close it out. Like, where do you think, after having this conversation, knowing what you know, where do you think hydrogen cars are going in the future? Is this going to be like a competition to EVs or PHEVs? Is this always going to be like a footnote that like nobody really cares about? What do you think?
To be clear, are you asking me that?
I'm asking you that.
Okay. Sorry. I wasn't
nobody sure else here.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was like a question to readers, like a feature you didn't like tell me about or something. It says, okay, cool. Where do I see this going? Like, I think, you know, I have heard of and seen and read about some really interesting applications for hydrogen in the commercial vehicle space, like heavy trucking, you know, construction equipment, things like that. Like, there perhaps is an avenue where it comes on the industrial side before it goes to passenger cars. I don't know. My thinking is, like, who benefits from building out this infrastructure the most, you know, and who's going to do it? Because, like, yeah. This is like a petroleum company level effort. And are they going to stop doing what they've been doing to invest more in this stuff? This is a different animal than building a charging station. It is orders of magnitude more expensive and logistically complex, you know, to take this volatile element and compress it down to 700 bar and then, you know, truck it across the country and get it in your vehicle that hopefully you might buy in order to use it someday. Like, that's a different animal than just building out your grid and greening your grid in different ways. So,
yeah,
I don't know if the release of the X5 comes with significant hydrogen infrastructure improvements, it could take off. I think the last thing we should say here is, like, it is a different market, different situation thing, right? Like, there are countries like South Korea, Japan, parts of Europe that are investing heavily in hydrogen. They're doing pretty well at it. Like I said, I when I went to Seoul last year and hung around, just walked around for a couple days, I'd never seen that many hydrogen cars there. Just like a good amount of Hyundai Nexos. I was like, okay. Whereas they're non-existent in America. Like, if the infrastructure gets built out in some places, it could be a thing. But America, yeah. I don't know yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a tough one. EV infrastructure is already so far ahead.
Yeah.
Like, you can already basically DC fast charge in a lot of places. I think EV technology is getting so much better that, like, maybe sometime soon you'll have a 10-minute charge, 15-minute charge. Like, then does the 5-minute hydrogen charge, does that really necessitate, is that really worth building this, like, enormous amount of infrastructure? I don't know. It's kind of like an EV that you can't fuel at home in your garage, which is like the best
part.
Owning an EV. So I don't know. I think it's really cool. I do think it'll ultimately probably be mostly for, you know, commercial applications like trucking. You really need a fast charge. You can't carry around batteries that weigh a huge amount when you're trying to like transport goods super far distances. You don't need to build as much infrastructure as you would if you were trying to like convert, you know, the entire American car fleet. So that's kind of where I stand on it for now. But we'll see what BMW can do.
I think my plan in the short term is to resign from my job, launch Inside Hydrogen, and just run that. And I just don't think you'd be very busy. Like, I think I could kind of take some naps here and there and kind of, you know, just not work as hard as I do. Sounds pretty slick, you know?
Yeah, you need any writers?
Yeah.
Probably not.
I don't think so, actually. That's the best part. I kid. All right, let's shift gears and talk about Volvo, actually. The company that made the brick of a station wagon you drove in high school that is still on the road somewhere, somehow, against all odds. But these days, Volvo is dealing with like a lot of challenges, has been for a while.
Yeah, it turns out that being a high-tech car company that's owned by a high-tech Chinese conglomerate doesn't automatically make you invincible, even in the EV era. This company is getting hammered by tariffs, by slower adoption of its EVs, and most recently by tons of bugs with its latest generation software.
Yeah, the software issues we've seen with the new electric Volvo EX90, something we've been covering for months at Inside EVs. I think this is probably the most disastrous launch of a new car from like a traditional automaker that I think I've ever seen. You know, like the central screen dying, like the phone as key function never working, like the car being bricked. It's pretty gnarly stuff for these owners.
Yeah, but this week, Volvo announced a step that could make things right for these owners. The company said it's upgrading the central computer, the main computing unit, on all 2025 EX90s for free. So this company has spent over a year trying to fix all these software bugs, but owners have still been reporting serious issues. And that's after, like, Mac, our deputy editor, went on this first drive last year sometime, I think, and there were all these unfinished things, all these unfinished parts of it, all these bugs, and that apparently continued with when people actually got the car. So not great from Volvo. Mac wrote about this, and the best part of his story was that, quote, one owner told Inside EBs that her EX90 has been, quote, a dumpster fire inside of a train wreck.
And that's, I couldn't have said it better myself. This is why we need a merch store, so I can put that on like a coffee mug or a hoodie or something.
Yeah. The new computer is an NVIDIA Drive AGX Orin-based core computer.
Oh, nice. With over sweet.
Yeah, pretty sweet. Sounds
I don't
sweet.
Know that, I don't know what that is, but anyway, go on. Yeah.
With over 500 TOPS of power, which I also just learned is trillion operations per second. Volvo says that computer will also help power its autonomous driving ambitions. So Volvo didn't say this outright, but apparently it was easier to just replace the original computer in these cars than to actually build better software that doesn't have bugs.
Yeah. And like, I don't have to tell anybody that like an NVIDIA processor at that level, like that is a serious computing machine. Like that is a very, very powerful, hardware set. And it's clear like Volvo has big plans for these things, for, you know, over the air updates and autonomous vehicles and just making this as high tech and advanced as possible. But like, that's not going to work if you're bogged down with all these issues. And one other money quote from that story, from an owner who talked to Mac, one of the service reps told me, when you bought this car, you knew it was new and you need to be patient with it. And I asked him, gosh, we paid just under $90,000 for the car. Is Volvo going to be patient with my lease payments? He didn't have an answer to that.
Oof. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tough spot for the people who currently own EX90s. It's maybe even better news for anybody who is not put off by this and is going to go buy the new version, the 2026 EX90. Pretty rare that you get such big changes in just a regular model year changeover. Like,
yeah,
the EX90 just came out, and now the 2026 model is getting a huge amount of software and hardware upgrades, including that new computer, plus a jump from a 400-volt architecture to an 800-volt architecture, which means things like faster charging. Volvo now claims the EX90 can add 155 miles of range in just 10 minutes. So that's,
yeah,
it's pretty good stuff from Volvo.
And before 10 to 80 was like 30 minutes. So like, I'm not sure the exact numbers here, but like, this is clearly a significantly faster charging vehicle than it was a year ago. So like, I don't know, kudos to Volvo. This is pretty rad, you know?
Yeah.
Lastly, Volvo announced a possible solution to its tariff problems. It is going to make a new, plug-in hybrid or extended range electric vehicle in South Carolina, explicitly for the American market in a few years. And I said, or, because Volvo didn't like directly say it's an EREV, you know, which is an electric vehicle built with a gas generator. But Volvo CEO Håkan Samuelsson, he kind of made it sound like one. His quote is, "We call it the second generation of hybrids. It behaves like an electric car with very fast acceleration, but has an onboard charger to extend the range. It's more of an electric car with a backup engine," is what he said. And that sounds like an EREV to me. Like when I was in China with Kevin Williams, we drove one of the Geely groups, which is Volvo's parent company, one of their EREVs. It's called the Lincoln Co. 900. And it's like a Volvo XC90, like a big SUV, but like honestly way better. And maybe this thing will follow that pattern. If like, I was really, really impressed with that thing. If it's anything like that at all, we have no clue it is. I'm kind of assuming, like, I think it's going to be really something great, you know?
Yeah. Looking forward to it. And, you know, between the failing software and the going back to gas by adding a gas generator to your EVs, it's just goes to show, you know, this software defined electric future is not as easy as anybody thought it would be, especially Volvo.
When are we gonna get an EREV that runs on hydrogen? Let's get that V12 out there, put that on a battery platform, get some hydrogen in that tank, you know, then you got yourself something that can go all over the state of California, you know, parts of it anyway.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
All right, now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world. Tim, who you got for me this week?
I have a plus, and this is going to sound familiar because there was actually kind of similar news a few weeks ago. Now it's even better. The BYD Yangwang U9 Extreme, which is basically BYD's like top-level supercar, is now the fastest production car ever. That means it's faster than the Bugatti Chiron. It's faster than everything else. It went 308 miles per hour on a track in Germany recently. A few weeks ago, it set the record for the fastest EV. Now it's just the fastest car ever. How did it do that? They say an upgraded powertrain that is not 800 volts, but 1200 volts. I have not heard of
God.
That.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Not heard of that before. Oh, didn't know that was a thing. LFP battery, four high-speed motors that each operate at 30,000 RPM and produce, we got to fact check this, but this is what they say, is the total output is almost 3,000 horsepower.
3,000 horsepower, yeah.
So like double a Bugatti Chiron, new suspension. So they threw the kitchen sink at this thing and it's the fastest car ever. I never know if these things actually matter. I kind of feel like if you're in the boardroom at Bugatti, like, are you sitting there being like, we got to do something, right? Like this kind of feels like a kick in the pants sort of moment. Like if you lose the fastest car distinction, like to a Chinese EV company, you got to be rethinking your life decisions up until that point.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, you know, Yangwang is one of the BYD brands that's expanding in Europe. Like who's going to go for this thing? Because that's a tremendous amount of power and technology, but it's not quite the prestige that, like, you know, these other hyper luxury brands have. But hey, it's faster and better apparently. So also I love that it's LFP batteries, because in America it's like, we need LFP batteries for cheap workhorse EVs, and then BYD's out here just like, you know, the car can like fly and drive to the moon and back in half an hour, like with an LFP battery, doing crazy stuff. So yeah, like, We got to get us behind the wheel of one of those, Tim. My plus this week is also BYD related, and the actual plus, the winner, is Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway, because they recently divested all of their BYD stock after owning a bunch of it for well over a decade. And I remember that happened. It was like there were like early headlines when I first started hearing about BYD. It's like, here's the obscure Chinese company that like Warren Buffett's very bullish on. And I was kind of like, what? Why does he care? Why are they putting so much money into BYD? I mean, it's like, you know, China's like run by like Audi and Volkswagen and Buick. Like maybe there's some play there for that local market. And now it's 2025,
yeah.
and BYD's out here kicking the shit out of Bugatti. So it's unclear how much Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway cashed out, but before it started selling parts of its stake in BYD in 2022, its stake was worth around $7.7 billion. So I think it's fair to assume that Warren Buffett did okay here on BYD.
Yeah, he's not going to starve.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the difference between me and Warren Buffett, Tim, is I was like, why is he doing this? And then like years later, he's even more powerful and richer than he ever was. So yeah, makes sense. All right, well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel, and check out all our EV coverage at InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
See you next time.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.